I can, sure. But they've already got my other deck, remember? I put my DNA on a record, the flag goes up, and I'm in for questioning. Yeah, Timmy said. Well, maybe you could... Shit, I don't know. Maybe you could think of something. I knew, Eric said. The second I saw those bastards coming down the street, I knew it was over for me. I'm dead. It's just a matter of time is all.
That's always true, Lydia said, her mind taken with other matters. For everyone.
Might as well be you,
Eric said to Timmy, giving his friend permission. Terror and love warring in his chest.
Nope,
Timmy said, cocking his head to one side as if he'd only just made the decision in that moment. Eric, Lydia started.
As long as I'm alive,
Eric said, ignoring her.
Burton's not safe. He's not going to let me slide.
Timmy frowned, then grunted in surprise. Maybe pleasure.
What?
Eric said.
Just that it works the other way, too,
Timmy said, levering himself up to his feet.
Anyway, I gotta go back in.
Back in? Eric said. Timmy brushed his hands across his wide thighs.
The city. I gotta go back to the city. Burton's expecting me.
You're not going to tell him where I am, are you? Eric asked. Timmy started laughing and Lydia took it up. Eric looked from one to the other, confused.
Nah, I'm not going to tell him where you are. I got something of his I need to give back is all. Nothing you have to worry about.
Easy for you to say, Eric said, ashamed of the whine in his voice.
I'll leave you the good boat,
Timmy said, turning toward the darkness. Will you be back? Lydia said. She hadn't meant to, because she knew in her heart, in her bones, and deeper than that, what the answer was. Timmy smiled at her for the last time. I take it back, she thought. Kill him. Kill the boy. Kill everyone else in the world. Shoot babies in the head and dance on their bodies. Any atrocity, any evil, is justified if it keeps you from leaving me.
Timmy
said.
You never know.
The darkness folded around him as he walked away. Her hands were made of lead and tungsten. Her belly felt hurt and empty as a miscarriage. And underneath the hurt and the horror, the betrayal and the pleasure she took in her distress, something else stirred and lifted its head. It took her time to recognize it as pride, and even then she couldn't have said who or what she was proud of, only that she was. The boat splashed once in the water, her almost son and sometime lover leaving the shore for the last time. Her lifetime was a fabric woven of losses, and she saw now that all of them had been practice, training her to teach her how to bear this pain like a boxer bloodying knuckles to make them strong and numb. All her life had been preparation for bearing this single, unbearable moment.
Shit,
Eric said.
Were there only two dinners? What am I going to eat?
Lydia plucked up the fork that had been Timmy's, gripping the stem in her fist like holding his hand again one last time, touching what he had touched, because she would never touch him again. Here, this object had opened his lips, felt the softness of his tongue, and been left behind. It held traces of him.
What's the matter?
Eric said.
Are you all right?
I stopped being all right before you were born, she thought. What she said was, there's something I'd like you to do for me. The streets of Baltimore didn't notice him pass through them this one last time. More than 3 million people lived and breathed, loved and lost, hoped and failed to hope that night, just as any other. A young woman hurrying home later than her father's curfew dodged around a tall man with thinning hair and pants wet to the knee at the corner of South and Lombard, muttering obscenities and curses at him that spoke more of her own dread and fear than anything the man had done. 4 Star Helix security employees, out of uniform and off shift, paused at the entrance to an Italian restaurant to watch a civilian pass. None of them could have said what it was about him that caught their attention, and it might only have been that they'd operated on high alert for so many days at once. The civilian went on, minding his own business, keeping himself to himself, and they went into the building's garlic and onion smells and forgot him. A bus driver stopped, let 2 old women, a thin-faced man, and a broad-shouldered, amiable fellow come on board. Bus service was part of basic, and the machine followed its route automatically. No one paid, no one spoke, and the driver went back to watching the entertainment feeds as soon as the bus pulled back into traffic. Nearer Oestra's safe house, things changed. There were more eyes, more of them alert. The catastrophe of the churn hung thick in the air, the sense that doom might come at any moment in the shape of security vans and riot gear and voices shouting to keep hands visible. Nothing like it had happened that day or the one before, but no one was taking comfort in that yet. The guards who stopped Timmy were different than the ones he'd seen earlier, but their placement on the street was the same. They stopped him, took the pistol that Burton had given him, scanned him for tracking devices, firearms, explosives, chemical agents, and when they found he was clean, they called in. Oestra's voice, through their earpieces, was less than a mosquito, but still perfectly recognizable, a familiar buzz and whine. They waved Timmy on. Oestra opened the door to him, automatic shotgun still in the lieutenant's hand, as if he hadn't put it down all day. Probably he hadn't. Timmy stepped into the main room, looking around pleasantly. The news feeds flickered silently on their screens. A street view from sometime earlier in the day, with 5 security vans lined up outside a burning apartment building. A serious-faced Indian woman speaking into the camera with a dour expression. An ad with 7 bouncing monkeys reaching for a box of banana-flavored cakes. The world cast its shadows on the bare brick wall and threw stories into the gray mortar. The churn running itself to exhaustion. New stories from around the world and above it filling in the void.
"You're back," Oestra said.
"Yup. You do the thing?"
"It got a little complicated," Timmy said.
"The man's still here?"
"Wait, I'll get him."
Oestra walked to the back, one set of footsteps fading into the safe house, then a long pause made rich by the murmur of voices, then 2 sets of footsteps coming back. The timestamp beside the dour Indian woman read 21:42. Timmy considered the curtains. Blue-dyed cotton with cords of woven nylon. The chair Oestra had been sitting on before, leather stretched over a light metal frame. A kitchen in through a wide brickwork archway. The bedroom in the back with its futon, and a bathroom somewhere behind that.
"Tiny," Burton said. "What's the news, little man?"
Burton's white shirt caught the light from the screens, dancing in 100 colors. His slacks were dark and beautifully cut. Timmy turned to him like he was an old friend. Oestra walked past them both, taking his place by the window. Timmy glanced back at him only a few feet away, a shotgun across his thighs.
"Well,"
Timmy said,
"truth is, I ran into a little hiccup."
Burton crossed his arms, squared his shoulders and hips.
"Something you couldn't handle?"
he asked, his voice hard with disapproval.
I'm waiting to see,
Timmy said.
Waiting to see if you can handle it?
Well, yeah,
Timmy said with a wide, open smile.
Actually, it's kind of funny you put it that way.
When the big man stepped back toward the window, the movement was so casual, so relaxed, that neither Oestra nor Burton recognized what was happening. Timmy's thick fingers grabbed the back of the leather chair, pulling back and down fast and hard. Oestra twisted, trying to keep from falling and also bring the shotgun to bear at the same time, managing neither. He spilled to the floor, Timmy's knee coming down hard on his neck. Oestra's muffled roar was equal parts outrage and pain. Timmy reached down and ripped the man's right ear off, then punched down twice, three times, four. Burton ran for the back bedroom. There wasn't much time. Unable to use it with Timmy on his neck, Oestra dropped the shotgun and twisted, trying to get his arms and legs under himself, trying to get the leverage to push Timmy back. Timmy reached down and hooked his finger into the gunman's left eye, bracing the head with his knee and turning his wrist until he felt the eyeball pop. Oestra's screams were wilder now, panic and pain taking over. Timmy let the pressure up, scooted to the left, and picked up the abandoned shotgun. He fired once into Oestra's head, and the man stopped screaming. Timmy trotted across the room, shotgun in one hand. Burton boiled out of the bedroom, pistols in either fist and teeth bared like a dog's. The front window shattered. Timmy ducked through the brick archway into the kitchen, shifted his grip on the shotgun, and swung it hard and low, leading with the elbow like a cricket player at the bat as Burton roared in after him. The sound of the connection was like a piece of raw steak being dropped on concrete. Burton's feet flew out from under him, but the momentum of his rush carried him stumbling into the space beyond. Timmy lowered the shotgun toward the man's head, but Burton whirled, dropping his own guns and grabbing the shotgun's barrel. The smell of burning skin was instantaneous. Timmy tried to pull back, but Burton kicked out. His right foot hit Timmy's knee like he'd kicked a fire hydrant, but Timmy still stumbled. The shotgun roared again, and the refrigerator sprouted pocks of twisted metal and plastic. Burton twisted, pulling himself in close, too close for the shotgun's long barrel. He hammered his elbow into Timmy's ribs twice and felt something give the third time. Timmy dropped the shotgun, and then they were both down on the floor. They grappled, caught in each other's arms, each man shifting for the position that would destroy the other in a parody of intimate love. The fingers of Burton's left hand worked their way under Timmy's chin, digging at his neck, pushing into the hard cartilage of his throat. Timmy choked, gagged, pulled back the centimeter that was all Burton needed. He pulled his right arm up into the gap, braced himself, twisted, and now Timmy's arm and head were locked. Burton gasped out a chuckle.
You just fucked the wrong asshole,
he hissed as Timmy bucked and struggled.
Your little crippled boyfriend, I'm gonna burn him down for days. I'm gonna find everyone you ever loved and kill them all slow.
Timmy grunted and pushed back, but the effort only made Burton's lock on him tighter.
You thought you could take me, you dumb fuck piece of shit,
Burton spat into Timmy's ear.
You thought you were tougher than me? I owned your mama, boy. You're just second-generation property.
All along their paired bodies, Burton felt Timmy tense and then, with a vast exhalation, relax, melting into the hold. Burton pulled tighter, squeezing. There was a report like a pistol shot, when Timmy's shoulder dislocated and the resistance stuttered. Burton's grip broke. Timmy rolled, cocked back his fist, and brought it down on the bridge of Burton's nose. The pain was bright. The volume of the world faded. The fist came down again, jostling the kitchen. The light seemed strange, reducing the red of the bricks and the yellow of the stove to shades of gray. Burton tried to bring his arms up to cover his face, to shield him from the violence, but they were a very long way away, and he kept losing track of them. He had them up, but they were numb and boneless. The attacks easily brushed them aside. The fist hit his nose again, and he didn't know if it was for the third time or the fourth.
Shit, he thought. This is just going to keep going on until that fucker decides to stop.